Well, good morning, everybody, and happy Trinity Sunday to all of you. I want to begin with a little story. It's a story of a pessimistic young man who's dining alone in a restaurant, and he orders something I would never order, broiled live lobster. And when the waiter put it on the table, instantly this young man noticed that it was missing a claw, and the pessimistic young man promptly complained. And the waiter said, "I'm so sorry, it's been unavoidable. There was a fight in the kitchen between two lobsters. The other one had torn off this one's claw and eaten it." And the young man pushed the lobster away toward the waiter. He said, "Take it away and bring me the winner." Now, I want to speak today about fighting. You say, "Simon, there's enough fighting and enough violence in the media without hearing about it at church." And I understand the news has been particularly boisterous and extremely disappointing and moving in all the wrong ways, as we've seen the violence in many places this week. But I do want to mention three different kinds of fights. The first one is described in 1 Peter 2, verse 9, where it speaks about our role as Christians to proclaim the excellencies of Him who called us out of darkness into His marvelous light. Now you say, "Simon, that doesn't mention fighting," but yet a fight has taken place. A fight for you and a fight for me. Jesus talks in the book of Mark and in the book of Matthew about His role of coming into the world to tie up the strong man. And the strong man in those illustrations represents the devil, the kind of archon or the ruler of this world, or even described as a small g god of this world. And Jesus came to tie him up to win your freedom. It says in 1 John 3 verse 8 that the reason Jesus came was to destroy the works of the devil. And in Colossians 2:15 it says He disarmed the powers and authorities. Now there is military language for you. He disarmed them by the cross, made a public spectacle of them, and triumphed over them. The battle's over. The bell has been rung. The season is done. Victory is secured. Praise God for that. That heaven's champion went to the cross to fight for your freedom. And if you're not a Christian yet, I want to encourage you. Go and claim what has been won for you. Go and claim the fact that Jesus thought you were worth fighting for, that he crossed the seas of eternity to get to a manger, to live for you, to get to a cross, to die for you, and to rise again for you. Accept that fight that has been conducted on your behalf. And salvation is simply receiving the work that has been done for us. As John 1 says, all we have to do is believe in His name and receive it. And all that has been fought for can be yours. Now, you've already heard one of my cheesy stories. Here's another one. A young man comes home one day with a big black eye. And his mother says to him, "Who gave you that black eye, Jim?" And Jim replied, "No one gave it to me. I had to fight for it." Now, the next fights I want to mention to you are not ones that are handed to us on a silver platter, the way the gift of salvation is by Jesus Christ. The other fights that we have to conduct actually involve our own blood, sweat, and tears. They involve our effort. And you know, salvation is not opposed to effort. It's just opposed to earning. When we get there, we're meant to show some effort. In fact, the Bible specifically says in Philippians that we have to work out our salvation with fear and trembling. We have to put our arm into it. You know, we can go as Christians from strength to strength and glory to glory, but we have to fight for it. Growth and fruitfulness have to be contended for. The question is, are you willing to do it? You cannot work up to your salvation, but you can work out your salvation with fear and trembling. Now, both of these fights, after that first fight where Jesus called us out of darkness into his marvelous light, all because of his own work, the next two fights that involve our effort are written very concisely in verses 11 and 12, the first couple of verses that Kate read to us this morning. Verse 11 says, "Beloved, I urge you as sojourners and exiles to abstain from the passions of the flesh, which wage war against your soul." The passions of the flesh wage war against your soul. This is the first battle of the Christian life, the first battle that you have to actually put your effort into. It's an internal battle against the passions of the flesh. You see, although Jesus has disarmed the powers and authorities, we have many battles of our own, because you see, the world, the flesh, and the devil, they keep on coming at us, and we have to fight them off. And what Peter wants to do here is he's reminded us of our identity. You are people who belong to heaven now. You're exiles from heaven, living on earth. But you do continue to live on earth. You're in the world, but you're not of it. So act like it. So abstain from the passions of the flesh that war against your soul. We need to resist, we need to fight, we need to abstain. But here's the problem. It's not like a war with someone coming at you with a gun. It's much more when we're fighting these passions of the flesh, like someone has slowly released a gas into the air. You know, someone once used the illustration, and it's been used many times since, of how you boil a frog. I'm sure you've heard this one before. You see, if you were to get a saucepan of boiling water and you were to get a frog, I don't want you to do this to the wee frogs, but it's an illustration. You get a frog and you throw it into the pot of boiling water. Guess what the frog would do? Jump straight back out. The shock of the heat of the water would cause him to recoil and get out of there. No, the way to boil a frog is to put a frog into a pot of cold water. And then simply turn the heat up. And degree by degree by degree, the water gets hotter, but the poor frog doesn't realize. That's the passions of the flesh for us. Thousands of advertisements, all the soaps, all the media, all the news, our leaders, our own bodies are inviting us to compromise and to be in the world and in the world, where we're supposed to be in the world but not of it. The world is shouting its truth against God, whispering his, telling you to give in to passions, telling you to give in to consumerism, telling you to give in to individualism, telling you to give in to functional atheism and a whole bunch of other isms. And we have to fight. And how do we fight? We fight by being in this world, but not of it. And how do we do that? We fight by being in this word and of it. So although we're hearing the voices of the world, we're also living squarely within the pages of God's revelation and being in his presence as much as we're being in the presence of those other voices. You know, I just read this morning about the earliest African converts to Christianity who were really earnest and regular in their private devotions. And in one particular area, each new Christian had reportedly separate spots in this big thicket of bushes where they would conduct their devotions and pour out their hearts to the Lord. And you know, there were paths to these little special secret places with the Lord for each of these new African Christians, distinctly marked because they went there so regularly. And apparently when one began to decline in his devotional time with God, it was soon apparent to others because the thicket began to grow back. And then they would gently and kindly remind that person, "Brother, the grass is growing on your path over there. The grass is growing on your path over there." You see, folks, if you're not in this word, you're going to be overcome by this world. And the encouragement here, internally, the battle you need to fight is abstain from the passions of the flesh, which wage war against your soul. Don't be unarmed in the internal war. Folks, if the first fight is an internal one, the second is an external one. If the passions of the flesh waged war in verse 11, it's the people of the world that are against us in verse 12. Verse 12 says this, "Keep your conduct among the Gentiles honorable, so that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day of visitation." See that? So that when they speak against you as evildoers, when they speak against you as evildoers, there's going to be opposition. There's going to be a bit of warfare going on from the world as they speak evil against the church. And this is going to be profoundly seen for these people that Peter is speaking to in the earliest days of the Christian church. There's going to be persecution. And folks, there's going to be this morning an enormous challenge to you. Because can I tell you that the standard which Peter asks for here is an incredibly high standard. I think this is why G.K. Chesterton famously said, "The Christian ideal has not been tried and found wanting. It has been found difficult and left untried." Folks, let me tell you, following Jesus is an adventure, it's a privilege, but it's hard. It's difficult, but it's exciting. There's an internal battle, but now here comes the external. You see, it's in fact in the external pressures of life that we often see what's truly inside. I don't know if you've ever had an experience where you've opened up a pot of tea bags and you're thinking, are these, you know, normal tea bags that I like, or are these weird tea bags that have like fruity tea in them or something? And you're sniffing them thinking, is that Earl Grey or Lady Grey, or is it just the Tetley that I like, the just basic tea that I like? And the only way to figure it out for lots of these teas is you've got to stick them in hot water. Well, Peter is warning these folks that they're going to meet hot water, and what's inside is truly going to come out. They're going to face an emperor called Nero, who is going to cause them lots and lots of difficulty. But Peter's saying here that it's actually an opportunity to either glorify Christ or dishonor him. Look at this. You know, they can expect criticism, so that when they speak evil against you, you know, when they speak it, you can expect it. You know, and it might be just criticism that we experience. It might be mild mistreatment. For these folks, it's going to be full-blown persecution. But there's a lovely promise here. If we keep, and if they keep their conduct among the Gentiles honorable, it says that the Gentiles might see their good deeds and glorify God on the day of visitation. It says a little bit later here, verse 15, "For this is the will of God, that by doing good, you should put to silence the ignorance of foolish people." So verse 15 gives us a wee promise here. If we have good deeds, it will silence the ignorance of these foolish people. Okay, that's pretty good, isn't it? You know, if we honor God with our external behavior, it will silence our opponents.
But I love the promise in verse 12 even more. Keep your conduct among the Gentiles honorable, so that when they speak against you as evildoers, listen, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day of visitation. What's it saying? It's saying that the pressure's going to come, but if the conduct is good, some of the opponents are actually going to see the difference that Jesus has made in lives, and they're going to come to faith and glorify God on the day that they meet him. What an incredible promise that the very opponents of faith could be won over by the Christian's reaction to persecution. It's a huge challenge. A huge challenge to continue to have good deeds even when you're being abused or mistreated. A huge challenge, but what an incredible reward. And then in the rest of the passage, slaves, honor your masters to try and win them. Christians, honor everybody. Honor each other. Even honor the emperor who is evil, tyrannical, and abusing the church. Peter wants the church to fight for internal and external godliness, that even the most ardent opponent of the gospel might see the undeniable beauty of Christ in us, the hope of glory, and want to receive him for themselves. Now, folks, I'm running out of time here, but I want to think about, how do we do this? How on earth do we continue to be godly? How do we continue to have good deeds even when we are being mistreated? Well, I think this passage has some suggestions, and I think it's got about three keys to how we can do that. And here are my simple three keys. Verse 19 speaks of how the slaves might be able to show good deeds even when their masters are mistreating them. And here's the key: being mindful of God. It's amazing, isn't it? If you can just keep your mind on the things of God, keep your focus on him, that no matter how bad the outlook, the uplook always seems good. Mindful of God. I love what it says in Psalm 16. I have set the Lord always before me. Because he is at my right hand, I shall not be moved. You want to be able to speak well to somebody that's slandering you? Be mindful of God. Keep the Lord always before you. Here's the second key. Verse 21. For to this you have been called, because Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example that you might follow in his steps. You know, Jesus, what he did on that cross is so much more than just an example. And never ever believe anyone that tells you that it's just a great moral example. It's so much more. It's a cosmic victory over death and sin and evil. But it's also an example. It's so much more than an example, but it's also an example. And he is our example because he was mistreated. And he suffered externally, but his internal shone through and his holiness shone through. And he is the glorious, blazing example for those of us who want to live godly lives under pressure. So, two keys. Remain mindful of God, follow the glorious example of Jesus. And finally, if we look at the verses following, verse 23 is just incredible. When he was reviled, he did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but continued entrusting himself to him who judges justly. Now, this is what the example of Jesus is. You know, we see mindfulness of Christ makes a difference. Following the example of Jesus makes a difference. But what we see in what Jesus did on that cross is he trusted the situation to his Father. I want to encourage you, if you're suffering external pressure and you want to live a godly life, trust that situation. Trust yourself to him who judges justly. Trust yourself and your situation to your Father in heaven. And the result of what Jesus did on that cross, your soul was won. A straying sheep brought home, as it says in verse 25. And the same can happen when you fight for godliness, even when it's difficult. You know, folks, we've mentioned three fights here. And all three fights are for souls. The first fight, Jesus carried out for your soul. The second fight against the passions which wage war against your soul. And the third fight, the external living out of the life of Jesus by the church, will win souls also, because the world is looking to see our godly conduct or otherwise. Are you fighting for souls? And are you fighting intentionally to win souls for Christ? I love what the missionary and cricketer C.T. Studd said. He said, "I pray that when I die, all of heaven will have a party to celebrate the fact that I am no longer in the fight. I pray that when I die, all hell will have a party to celebrate the fact that I am no longer in the fight." Folks, can I encourage you? Enter the fight. Abstain from passions and have an even greater passion for the Word of God. Can I encourage you to live godly lives? Can I encourage you to live mindful of God, following the example of Christ, trusting Him to judge situations justly, and to be obsessed with winning souls for Jesus? I'll close with a quote from Billy Graham, a man who dedicated his life to the pursuit of soul winning. Here's what he says to Christians. "We are the Bibles the world is reading. We are the creeds the world is needing. We are the sermons the world is heeding. We are the Bibles the world is reading. We are the creeds the world is needing. We are the sermons the world is heeding." May your life, a life won on the cross by Jesus Christ, be a life that is victorious against sin, and be a life that is notorious in hell for winning souls for Jesus. I pray in Jesus Christ's name. Amen.